When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
3, 2, 1. Let's go.
What's hot in the strip clubs? Your hosts, the 2016 and 2017 recipients of the Exotic Dancer Publications DJ of the Year Award, Danny Myers and Alon Fong.
Welcome to Behind the Curtain, a What's Hot in the Strip Clubs podcast on the Pantheon Podcast Network. We are found on all major streaming platforms, or you can go to our website, www.whatshotitsc.com. I'm your host, Elon Fong, and welcome to part two of our interview with Steven Rosen, author of Tone Chaser, the book about Eddie Van Halen, the GOAT, on guitar. I'm super excited to start part two of our interview with Steven Rosen. We're going to pick up where we left off and start into the Sammy Hagar era. Please enjoy.
So, let's move into the Sammy era. So Sammy enters, you know, famously through the mechanic Claudio, right? The Lamborghini Ferrari guy. Goes.
Hello, baby.
Yeah. Right. And so he joins the band. Eddie is over the moon. He's got a songwriter collaborator with who plays some guitar, understands musicianship a little bit more, has got one hell of a vocal range and his own successful career. So he's adding probably a few new fans. I'm sure there's a lot of cross-pollination there with the fan base, a few new fans as well with Sammy. But more importantly to me, the question is, what was Ed's shift in his happiness or whatever? Like, what was your first impression of the early love affair with Sammy Hagar?
I can tell you exactly when that was. And I write about this and I'll talk about this when this is so cool. So yeah, it's in that interim period. Ed reached out to me one time and says, "Hey man, go find me a singer." And I'm thinking he's just talking, you know, in generality, like, right, I'm going to go find you a singer. I said to him, like, yeah, right. You know, goes, no, really, go find me a singer.
It was me. It was supposed to be me, Steven. You're supposed to there come to my comment or my pizza shop here in Ohio.
I worked out that age. Had I known, I would have passed on your name. Ed was funny. He was the greatest guitar player on the planet. He had all the charisma you could ever ask for. He was an amazing songwriter, but I don't think he understood or didn't want to do it himself, the mechanics of what was involved to go out and find a singer. Now, you can imagine the Rolodex Ed must have had. I mean, you mean to tell me he couldn't have called
anyone?
I mean, he could have called Freddie Mercury and said, "Hey, Freddie, come and be in the band for you." Right. So, look, any singer would have been available to him. I don't think he understood. I mean, look, I'm not saying he didn't know how to use a telephone or call, but it was just something he wasn't, in the same way that he couldn't remember hanging out with me, he couldn't remember me introducing him to Les Paul. 2 days later, were there in the same room with me? In the same way, man, there was no room in his head for picking up a phone and going, "Hi, Sammy, Eddie Van Halen, let's dance." It wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So when he asked me to find him a singer, he was dead serious. Wow. I wish I had taken him more seriously, because I would have taken a more serious role, man. You know, maybe I could have been brought on as a gopher or something, you know.
Hey, but who would you have picked to be the Van Halen singer?
And that's a good question. You know, I always say this when people say, no, you're out of your mind. I would have found an unknown guy.
Okay.
Some unbelievable unknown. But there you go.
Me.
But people are saying, look, man, it's business. Warner Brothers is not going to allow some unknown. You know, maybe there was some unknown who looked and sang exactly like Dave. Maybe, you know, Journey or something. But yeah, some unbelievable unknown singer. So that would have been, that's my idea. That got shelved quickly. So I said, okay, Dave, you know, okay, Ed, I'll start looking, you know. I think I found one guy. I can't remember who it was. And Ed heard, I think I had a tape or something. And he goes, nah, I'm not hearing it, you know. And I was embarrassed, you know. And I said, well, it's not bad. He goes, nah, it's okay, but he sounds like everybody else. It's like, he was cool about it, but you know what I mean. I'm trying totally. To pitch a singer to Eddie Van Halen and come on. Like the next day or a couple week later, there's a message and I wish I had been home. I wasn't home. Hi, Steve, Eddie. And he'd always say, hi, Steve, Eddie. Like I never recognized his voice. And right now I've heard his voice 1,000 times.
Eddie who?
Exactly. And that goes to that thing about him again, like I wouldn't recognize his voice or I would forget how his, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, totally.
Yeah, why would you remember me, Steve, you know?
Yeah.
Which is what made the guy so freaking lovable, really. Good man, Sammy Hagar. Sammy's vocals to my music, you won't believe it. It's the next level. Yeah. And I have that on tape. And I have that verbatim in the book. And yeah, man, he was ecstatic. However, he did say, with the conversation, he goes, and I misconstrued what he said. He goes, yeah, man, I don't like Sammy's song. I go, what are you talking about? You just talk about loving, you know, Sammy's the band. I said, what? He goes, yeah, man, he says, I've never really been a fan of Sammy's.
Got it.
Songwriting,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think he mentioned, I don't know, one of the songs he goes, and I have this on tape and I have it in the book. I can't remember exactly, but he says he thought the structures of Sammy's songs were a little odd to him, you know, which is weird that, you know, he would say that about a singer and then not worry about Sammy coming in with those same song structures, but you
sure,
know,
sure.
But he was, yeah, he loved that, that early period, man, 5150.
There's no doubt Eddie pushed Sammy because, I mean, I was a Sammy fan of his solo career as well. In fact, in shop class in 1984 in high school, remember you had to do shop class and we did a screen printing thing, right? So we get to print.
I love that class.
Right. So we get to screen print our own painter's hats. And I did one. It had the Van Halen logo. It had a big Phoenix on the top. And then it had the Sammy Hagar VOA. And Van Halen had been broken up. And my buddy goes, this is before he, you know, Sammy signed with him. And he goes, why do you put, so I love the VOA album. And obviously, you guys don't know a thing of Van Halen. I go, you know what? Sammy would be a great singer for Van Halen. Everyone's like, dude, shut up. Get the fuck out of here. I'm like, no, think about it. He's blonde. He's got his great voice. You know, he's high energy. Da, 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 da. And they're like, yeah, but the Red Rocker stuff. I'm like, okay, yeah, I get that part. But, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I was prescient with I still have that hat somewhere. I saved it. I loved it so much. Anyways.
Funny, man.
So Sammy was definitely pushed. Like the stuff he sings on the 5150 record is at the edge of his range. I think being around those sort of musicians, which was next level. Look, he played with some great guys in his solo career, and he was definitely a competent guitarist and a talented player in his own right. But being with the Alexes and Eds of the world, man, like, and he could not worry about guitar because it's all underneath him. So I've always said this, like, if you watch American Idol, they have these people who play acoustic guitars, right?
Yeah.
But then they always tell them at some point, put the guitar down. Focus on connecting with the audience and focus on your vocals. And they do, and they have a next level performance. And I think for Sammy, when he didn't have to worry about playing the rhythm part and playing the lead and just singing, my God, man, some of the vocals he put on tape, like, wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Ed talks about that, you know, pushing Sammy, and Sammy said, I can't hit that note. And Ed said, yeah, man, you can hit it. So Ed was obviously there in the studio, Sammy anyway. But yeah, no, Ed certainly recognized that. And it's, you know, it's evident in the music he was writing, right? You know, the ranges are now much higher and the parts to sing over the orchestrations are more elaborate, you know, you got to really find the place where that vocal's going to fit in there. So,
Now famously they like Sammy at one point moved right next door to Eddie, didn't he? In Malibu or something?
He did.
So they were really close at one point, like really good friends, right?
They were.
What?
They were.
Do you have any idea what maybe was there a personal rift? Was it just the business stuff? Was it the drinking? Both of them were drinking and partying and, you know, whatever. And I know Sammy was divorced, so he was kind of living like a teenager again. And Ed's probably like, man, I've already done that. I don't know. But any idea what sort of maybe started the rift?
Right. So again, that truth lies somewhere between Sammy's version and Ed's version. You know, the Twister record is what Ed said was what set that up. But certainly that's just, that's the symptom. That wasn't the disease, you know, which must have started earlier. I think, again, with Ed, it was about respect. Let me backtrack just a little bit, Elon. Respect. With Ed, it was all about respect. Look, no one had a musical regimen like Ed, right? He had a guitar. He was up till 6 in the morning. He'd go sleep for 5 hours and be back on the ship. So no one couldn't begin to follow him. But Ed, he wanted to know you were giving everything to the band. when Sammy joined the band, and we all know this, and I write about this in the book, and I, you know, maybe people think, oh, I'm an idiot, you're crazy. Edward allowed Sammy to keep pursuing his solo career. To my mind, that was idiocy. Everybody said, well, he had a deal on Geffen, and he couldn't get out of it. Look, man, you're talking about Van Halen and Warner Brothers, and they couldn't have got him. Anything could have been getting out of, you know, Geffen wanted his piece, and I get that, you know, they could have figured that out. At a point in time, Edward agreed with me. Sammy is now spending too much time on his solo career. And I didn't want to say, I told you fucking so, man. Why would you let him do that? What singer would join the band and you allow this guy to speak, keep his solo career?
Right.
You know what I mean? I'd never heard of it happening.
But didn't Eddie even played on those tracks, though? He played bass
exactly,
and produced it.
Exactly. And at that time, I think Ed was like, okay, I'm going to swallow my pride. But I think Ed didn't like what was happening to me. I know.
Interesting.
So from that first solo record, right. So it's growing, it's growing, it's growing. Sammy's wife was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Ed was saying, well, hey, I can understand, you know, if you want to spend more time, you know, but Sammy would come in and sing for an hour, then he had to leave, and Ed was just getting pissed off. Sammy was turning in, I think, what Ed believed were substandard performances.
Okay.
Sammy's lyrics for the Twister project specifically, the director didn't want anything to do with a Twister, and Sammy's
right, famously, lyrics, yeah, that story's been told, yeah, for sure.
Twister-centric. So Ed was working with.
Was it Glenn Ballard?
Sammy Anderson. I'm sorry.
Was it Glenn Ballard? That was the producer.
Yes. Ballard. Excellent. Okay. So Sammy was upset. He doesn't want to see another songwriter in the. I get it totally. Man, just like you don't want another singer when you're cutting a track saying, oh, this other guy does it, man. I get it, but I think Sammy, I don't know, he really got angry. So, you know, there's this and this. And at that point, Sammy was talking about the drinking with Ed and Al. And, you know, that was always that block, you know, the Van Halen block. And yeah, it just grows to a point where that honeymoon just ends, you know.
From the outside looking in, hearing this stuff, it really sounds, a lot of it's just communication stuff. People wait, just like in a marriage, you wait too long to communicate what you need or what you want, and then you start resenting, and then it blows up bigger than it has to be. I've always said, if I was a record label exec, I would have a huge staff of therapists that I would mandatory make all the band meet with in a group setting so they can always communicate from the jump. Because if you don't develop those habits early, you end up with what we've seen with so many bands and relationships. Yeah. It's not just, you know, bands. But speaking to that, so, you know, at what point, Eddie is famously incredibly loyal, and listening to you talk and hearing and reading the Tulinski book about that stuff, I've heard you say about how Eddie, because of the way his brain worked and just the constant flow of music, and he had to get it out, and it was almost manic. It was, you know, he was in the studio 18, 20, 20 hours a day, 4 hours sleep a night. Eddie has said he is what he needs and what he does, and he goes back to it. Knowing what we know now, is it possible that Eddie was maybe on the spectrum a little bit? Was he, you know what I mean? Like not, there's nothing wrong with that. There's high functioning people, but it sounds like almost with his obsessive nature around music, and nothing wrong with that. Obviously, he was, you know, very successful and all that. So I'm just curious about the functioning of him as a man, as a person.
Yeah. I mean, however that would have been manifested, I mean, I don't know if I would have recognized it anyway. I don't think so. I think it was just a guy who, you know, this is what he did and this is what he loved, to the exclusion sometimes of everything else. You know, he loved Valerie, you know, I mean, they loved each other. They were really good for each other. But you know, it's 5 a.m. and I was out there, you know, and the phone would ring. Now I'm coming in, honey, you know, and we'd hang out for another 3 hours. That's hard to take. You know, I mean, as much as we understood as well as anybody what that's like to be in the spotlight and celebrity and this and that. And that's hard. That's hard, you know. And when you were around Ed, there was he cast a big shadow.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, you know, I write about this again. I was invisible.
Sure.
I mean, not that I shouldn't have been visible, but I mean, if we, you know, we go to a concert, I did not exist. It was the most amazing thing, man.
Yeah.
You know, so I can imagine how other people, family or band guy, I don't know if Ed, you know, I've heard that posited about the spectrum thing. I don't think so, man. I think it was just, I think he was an addictive personality. He was addicted to music. And he liked it. He was addicted to those other things.
You know, it's interesting because Eddie is, you know, the two greatest passions by all accounts for him were music and family. And when you hear the argument with Sammy and stuff, less so with Dave, that was different. But Sammy, on one level, had really good boundaries, right? About his personal life and separating business and personal. And Eddie sort of didn't, as per the story you just shared about him and Valerie, even like, hey, come in, come to bed. You know what I mean? Like, you're literally up the driveway and you can't spend, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so, as a normal functioning human being, we're not Eddie Van Halen. We don't have that access to God or talent or the universe that he had, right? It's hard for us even to fathom or understand what is being delivered to him, right? And much less the drive to put it out, right? The almost you have to, right? But for someone like Sammy, who is obviously a consummate businessman, and I feel like he's probably good at segregating his life, put it in a box, keeping everything in its place in your life. And then Eddie, who's just go, 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 go. And then you look at, you know, what happened with Valerie and all that stuff. And obviously he loves and adored Wolfgang, who's an amazing talent unto himself. You know, you wonder, at least again, from the outside looking in, with his, you know, addiction stuff and alcohol and substance abuse and not being able to shut his brain down. Again, delving into Eddie the man, do you think he was really happy? I know, you know, obviously he was a tortured soul a little bit, and especially later once he did therapy and maybe got sober. What do you think really did he find that made him happy truly as a human being? Fuck fame, fuck Van Halen, the band, but as Eddie, as Ed, as, you know, your friend.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that he was happiest those first two records, those first two tours. Again, that's tied into the music and all that stuff, but you know, it was all new to him, you know, whatever dysfunctionality there was in the band. And there was dysfunctionality from the early, you know, moments was not enough to concern him, you know, and he was making these records and he was in the studio.
With common goals.
He was
and you very much have common goals, all four guys at that point.
Exactly, man. So, I mean, he was really happy. What made him really happy? I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question. I mean, again, it goes back to respect, and I think it all splinters off that. But if you over respected him and you over complimented him, he did not like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, he served that so much, you know, and I realized that early on, and I tried not to do that. You know, I tried not to say, oh my God, yeah, that is a couple times I just, oh, Jesus, Ed, that's amazing, you know. And he goes, yeah. And I could see he was just not mad, but it's like.
Yeah, disappointed, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. But then the other side of that, and I remember, I think it was solo on Fair Warning we were talking about. I don't know, one of his amazing solos. And I didn't mean it to come out this way. And I said, yeah, that's really good. And he goes, don't you think it's good? Like, my response, like, now it's like, and again, that goes to who he was. God, what made him happy, man? I think it was just all those things. I mean, yeah, Wolf, you know, he was really happy when Wolf was born. I think he always wanted to be a father. And I'd ask him that question way earlier. Hey, Ed, you want to have a family? He goes, yeah. I go, you want your kids to be musical? He goes, yeah, man, if that's what they want to do.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, I think it's the same things that anybody would want. Okay. Family, success, and, you know, obviously it was never about money with him or
sure.
celebrity because he had that so early. With his parents, I mean, for what I could gather, was a little funny.
Always maybe, complicated, isn't it? All our relationship with our parents, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So here's a question for you about Ed. Would he have been just happy recording and releasing music, or did he really love the performing and being up on stage? Because I know he's a big introvert, and he used to say a lot of his drinking was to get up on stage. Do you think he would have been happy recording and releasing music and not having to go out and perform, or did he really love performing?
I think he loved performing. Okay. And I think saying, yeah, drinking was, you know, gone to, that's just an excuse to drink. No, I think he loved that moment. And I write about it too. You know, the Edward Van Halen you see on stage is not the Edward Van Halen. We drive by the house, you know, and hang out and, you know, smoke cigarettes and, you know, eat potato chips. He was two different guys. The thing with that is, the second he walked off stage, he wasn't Eddie Van Halen. He was Edward Van Halen.
He was just
Ed. You know, and right. A lot of guys can't turn that off. And that's, I think Ed loved performing. I also think he was aware of when a performance wasn't good. I think that made him insane.
Even when he was drunk, like, you know, you hear stories about the 04 tour, the reunion tour with Sammy, where his performances towards the end were hit and miss a little bit. Do you think he was aware?
Oh, I think he was pretty aware. I mean, yeah, the last tours, the final tour.
With Sammy.
I think he was aware. I don't think he should have been touring, but that's just
fun. Yeah, he had a lot of health problems too. The cancer had come, his hip was a mess still, right? All that stuff. Well, let's take a little break, and then we'll go into the third era here. So let me take another short break here, and we'll be back with more with Steven Rosen, author of Tone Chaser, all about Eddie Van Halen.
This is DJ Mike D with my chum Elon Fong, right here on the What's Hot in the Strip Club podcast on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
All right, we're back. Segment three with Steven Rosen talking about his novel book Tone Chaser about Eddie Van Halen. We've covered the Roth eras, we've covered a lot of the Sammy eras, we've been talking about who Eddie was as a person, and I want to get to a very underrated era in my opinion, the Van Halen 3 record with Gary Cherone, the former lead singer and now back again with Extreme. How he got there was interesting. The manager Daniels was
Ray Daniels was managing
Van Halen at the time, and he also managed Extreme, and Extreme had broken up a little prior, and after Sammy left, Eddie was looking for a singer and they were auditioning people. And he said, hey, Gary, you should try this. So he hit it off famously, apparently. And Eddie loved him. And look, I'm a big Extreme fan too. I think Gary's very underrated as a vocalist, as a lyricist, as a performer. I think he's getting his due with this new Extreme record a little bit. And the match was interesting to me. I'm a big fan of both bands. It didn't seem to quite fit as naturally to me. And so I'll say this. So the Van Halen 3 record, I like a lot. It's not a Van Halen record per se to me. It's very different. It's very experimental. Eddie had gone through therapy and had sobered up and was very creative. I think it's got some of his most creative playing on it. I think I love Extreme, so I know what Gary brings as a lyricist and as composer himself. So it felt very much like a sort of amalgam of the two bands. My biggest complaint about the record, to me, was it felt very unfinished. Production-wise, I thought the sound was not very good. It felt like demos more than a completed record, a polished record that you would expect from Warner Brothers and from Van Halen. And even a little bit arrangement-wise, it felt like the singers were, some of the songs weren't quite done. Some phenomenal ideas, they just hadn't all coalesced yet. I would have loved to heard the next record. I understand, and we won't get too much into this because I really want to get into how Eddie was feeling, how devastating it must have been after 20 years of hit record after hit record to have the crowd go, no, we don't dig that. To me, that's fascinating as a human being, but also as an artist. How do you go from never missing and how that must have affected his psyche? So let's talk a little bit about the record and Gary and Eddie's playing on it. Or what is your take on Van Halen 3?
So this is like 95, Elon?
98 is when the album came out, but I think 97 is when Gary joined the band, or 97, 98?
Yeah. By this time, in fact, a few years prior, my relationship with Ed, and I don't want to give this away, but I think it's probably a little bit common knowledge. Well, it started to unravel. Edward had changed. I try to answer that, figure out what it was. I was not hanging out with him. I wasn't going up to the house anymore. So I think the first time I saw him, and after a span of time had passed, Warner Brothers was setting up a day of interviews at 5150. And I wasn't going to go. It's like, oh my God. So I thought, well, no, I'm going to go. So I walk in, I see Ed, and I hadn't spoken to him. I mean, it had been a long, long time. So I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe he's just been busy, or he's been Ed, and, you know, his head is filled with other stuff. Hold me and hug me like he always did when we met.
Did you get the kiss on the lips?
What's that?
Did you get the kiss on the lips from Ed?
Kiss me on the lips. He always kissed me on the cheeks. Yeah. I remember the first time he did that. It's funny. I've traveled a fair bit, and they used to do that all the time. They actually did it in Egypt, they do that thing. And they also do it. I was in Kathmandu, Nepal. Yeah, they also do that. It's just, nothing sexual. It's just a
no, of course
friendly,
not. Of course not.
I mean, I dug it. I mean, I thought it was so.
It's sweet. Yeah.
So comfortable, you know. Well, yeah. You know that. I mean, of course you would know that. So yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I thought, or something, you know. And he's sitting down, you know. Walk in, and I mean, he doesn't even stand up, you know. And he goes, oh, you know, and it was.
It's too bad.
It was horrible.
That's sad.
So we're talking, and the record hadn't come out yet. That's what it was. And I think he was talking about it. I knew enough from doing other interviews with Edward that he was going through motions. I knew he was reading a script. Literally, Warner Brothers said, hey, talk about this shit from this. Don't talk about that. Don't talk about Dave. Don't, you know, I mean, I knew. I could tell. At that point, I was just like not interested.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to like wring him by the neck. And this, so the conversation's kind of over, you know. And I said something about a new singer. I guess everybody knew there was a new singer. Something about a new singer. He goes, yeah, you know. And he says, just between friends. And I was kind of floored that he would even use that word, you know, that description. So I said, yeah, man, of course, you know. He goes, yeah, well, Gary Cerone, and I love him, man. It's like we're brothers and we get along so great. Yeah, he was really enamored with Gary. I wish I could tell you more about post that, or, you know, what happened. I also like that record, man. Mm-hmm. And I say that to people, and they look at me like you're an idiot.
That's a great record.
The guy, I think, I'm going to really get in trouble for this. I think he was a better singer than Dave or Sammy.
There's arguments for that. Yeah.
I mean, look, if Sammy had sung that record, it would have been a monster record.
Yeah, that's
true. I just don't think people could accept a third singer from Van Halen.
I agree.
I don't care if you were maybe the Beatles could have gotten away with three people replacing Paul McCartney, but you know what I mean? People won't accept that. I mean, but I know what you're saying, and what's his name produced that?
Oh, Mike Post.
Oh, God.
That made no sense. The Hill Street Blues guy.
Right. I mean, Mike Post is an amazing producer, not for Van Halen.
Not now, for a rock band. No, yeah.
How does that happen?
You know, see, that's that where happens? Eddie needed no men, not yes men.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. Could you talk about, obviously, you and Eddie had drifted apart a little bit for whatever reason. Did Eddie have any friends that carried through his whole life besides Alex that you're aware of?
One of his very close friends, Ed, wrote that song for. He played me the song. This is a very close friend of his who passed away. But he passed away early on.
Okay.
Honestly, I don't think so. I mean, he was friends with Luke, Steve Lukather.
Yeah, Lukather and him were close.
Right. But I'm not sure. Well, in fact, I talk about Luke, and he became friends with Luke pretty early on. I think he and Luke, but I think that was a different kind of a relationship.
Like friendship, but like, yeah, they lived the same life. So I think there was an element of that, right? They had that in common.
Exactly. I mean, they're both, you know, very successful musicians. And, you
a lot
know,
of cocaine.
What's that?
A lot of cocaine based on the stories I've heard.
Lots of cocaine. you know, yeah, so there's that basic mutual respect for each other. Honestly, I don't think so. I don't think there was ever that friend that...
That's too bad.
You know?
Again, strange. On the outside looking in, he has a pattern of sort of love bombing these singers. And developing these really close relationships way too soon, way too fast type of thing, right? Like you were with a girl almost. Not sexual, I'm not saying that.
No, I know.
Yeah, and then the friction happens and they don't have the communication skills to weather it. You know, not with Gary, because that was more a professional thing. They were like, it didn't sell, so Gary got pushed aside by the label probably.
Yeah.
I think they should have given him one more chance on a second record to see. It's kind of like to me, like the Motley Crue Karabi record. That is a to me, it's the best sounding Motley record, and it's a phenomenal record. They just should not have stayed with the Motley Crue name. Just rebrand, dude. Companies do it all the time. I know Eddie's going to say, well, it's my name in the band. It's Van Halen. Yes and no, it isn't. There's a brand. Sorry, Van Halen isn't just Eddie and Alex. They are probably the biggest parts of it, but Dave and Sammy and, yes, Michael and now Wolfie are a big part of that brand as well.
Yeah, no, that could have been a good idea. Call it, you know, the blues band or something. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, real quick, one of my favorite things hearing Eddie play, because he sounded so free and fun, was on the Starfleet Project jam with Brian May, which just He just released all of it, like all the recordings. Yeah. I can't wait to hear it. But I had it on vinyl, and I used to listen. And when they do Blues Breaker, I think that's Cream or by Mile Blues. Oh my God, Eddie goes off.
John Mayall.
Oh my God. Yeah. If you've never heard it, go listen to it.
Yeah. I heard it a long time ago. You know, that's what Clapton heard. He goes, yeah, I don't know why Eddie Van Halen says I'm his biggest influence. He can't play the blues. Later on, I guess they became friends. There's a bunch of photos of Eric and you know, it's funny. I've been trying to get my book to Clapton. Writing his publishers go, listen, Clapton was Eddie's biggest influence, you know, and get the book to Eric. But I talked about that starkly. I mean, he really loved Brian May playing, recognized him as, because Brian gets the Brown sound, doesn't he? I go, hell yeah, he does.
Yeah, it sounded amazing. And so free. Yeah. It's one of the most fun recordings you'll ever hear. Like, you just feel like you're hearing Eddie just talking to you. It's amazing.
Let's take a short break right here. We'll be back with more with Steven Rosen, author of Tone Chaser, the amazing book about Eddie Van Halen.
Hey, what's happening? It's DJ Mike D, and you're listening to a What's Hot in the Strip Club podcast on the Pantheon Podcast Network. Let's get it.
Welcome back to Behind the Curtain, a What's Hot in the Strip Clubs podcast on the Pantheon Podcast Network, found on all major streaming platforms, or you can go to our website, www.whatshotitsc.com. We are talking to author Steven Rosen of the book Tone Chaser, all about Eddie Van Halen.
All right, let me do this. Okay, I have I told you I had my friends growing up. Many of them are guitarists, and we all bonded over Van Halen, of course. And before I called you or hooked this up, I called them and texted them and said, hey, any questions you'd want to ask? Let me go through a couple of these. Do you mind?
Absolutely not.
All right. So my buddy Tom Lang from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania said, did Eddie ever share with anyone what his preparation was the moments before heading out on stage?
I was never privy to that side of it.
Ah, damn.
You know, when Ed was in touring mode, performance mode, it was like that was his world. I wish I could have seen that. I wish I had. I know that I hung out with Edward at the Day on the Green, 78, which is their first big show away from the Journey tour. And I was backstage before they went on.
Mm-hmm.
Ed had a guitar in his hand, and he had a little practice amp in his little cabana that each band had his own little compound, and he would warm up. I don't know if Ed, I mean, I don't know. I could be entirely wrong. You know, maybe he went through a whole mental, emotional thing. I don't think so, man.
Okay.
So this is 78. Edward is
23,
right? Born in 55.
Yep.
He's a 23-year-old kid.
Wow.
Playing in a show. Well, AC/DC opened. Now AC/DC, I think, is their first tour, so they weren't that big. Foreigner's headlining.
Aerosmith.
These are bands, you know, that Ed, I mean,
Nugent was on that bill run. He was at the height, wasn't he?
Pat Thrall and,
okay.
I think Nugent was on Another Day on the Green.
Okay.
So it's their first big show. I mean, he was like he's playing another backyard party, man. He was really happy. Like I said, man, he was, you know, he's got the guitar. That's the photo, if I may.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great photo. It's on your website too.
Yeah, Neil Lozauer's famous photo. Neil was there that day. So honestly, man, I wish I could give you more specific. Honestly, I mean, I think Ed just tuned up his guitar and he just
went out and jammed. My fantasy dream has always been, so on the back of Diver Down, you have that shot of them, I think at Oakland Stadium, from like behind them.
Yeah.
You know, Dave's going out doing his prance, and that's always been my dream, is to play a stadium show. I don't know if it'll ever happen. I've been on stage on a stadium thing, but not with them there to see me. I just was a guest of somebody and was in soundcheck, so it was empty. Thanks, Metallica.
Yeah. I get it, man.
Question number two is, speaking of Tone Chaser, did Eddie ever say that the metal picks he used were the key to his signature sound? The crazy squeals and scrapes he made, or was it more just the pedals and amps he used, and of course his incredible talent? And of course we know that the metal picks, Eddie thought, is what gave him cancer because he always held it in his mouth. But do you know if Eddie said anything about the metal picks influencing his sound? Because he only used metal picks, right?
Early on. Well, that first interview I did with him, December 77. Yeah, we talked about strings and picks. He said, yeah, I use metal picks. Somebody makes them for me. And that's about the only discussion we had. after he stopped using metal picks and he was using regular, you know, plastic picks, I mean,
okay.
he was still getting the same,
okay.
you know, feel. But I mean, it's a great question. And in terms of, he says it was, he got the cancer of the tongue because of that. I don't know, man. And I write about this. Edward smoked more than any human being I've seen in my life. I've been around guys who smoked a shitload.
Yeah.
And it was horrible. It was horrendous, you know. Did the picks do that as opposed to cigarettes? I don't know.
I probably couldn't have hung out with them with my asthma then.
Well, man, I'll tell you, maybe as bad as your asthma were my migraines.
Oh, man.
Cigarette smoke, oh, my God. You know, because back in the day, you know, there was no smoking bans anywhere.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Bars, nightclubs, yeah, restaurants.
Walk into a club on yeah. airplanes.
Oh, yeah, airplanes.
And
yeah.
restaurants while you're eating. And it's,
yeah, I remember those days. God. Let's see here. So my friend John Harden asked, did Eddie ever play on someone else's album that was uncredited that you know of?
I don't think it was ever uncredited, but he did use pseudonyms.
Oh, really?
Yes. One of them, in fact, there was two. There was the Nicolette Larson, who was a Warner's artist. She's kind of a, you know, singer.
I remember she was a Christian, borderline Christian artist, wasn't she?
Could have been. Attractive brown hair, you know. Mm-hmm. I think she played, you know, like acoustic guitar. And I forget his name on there. In fact, Ed told me a story about why he did that.
Okay.
I don't want to give it away because it's a fun little bit. So you got to lay for that in the book, too. Right. And he played on Tim Bogert's solo record. He loved Tim. Tim was really? His favorite bass player, I think.
Who did Tim? I don't know that name. Who did Tim play with?
Oh, Vanilla Fudge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Beck Bogert and Apsy. He was a big Bogert fan, hung out a lot with Kim, and I forget the name that he used on that record. Those are the only two I can think of. Obviously, you know, Michael Jackson.
Yeah, of course.
That was Eddie Van Halen.
And he did the Wildlife soundtrack.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And the famously, the Back to the Future thing. That I, you know what's funny is all those years when Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future pops on the headphones and blows out the amp and you hear the playing, and it says Eddie on the tape, the cassette tape in the movie. But it didn't sound like Eddie to me. I'm like, oh, that's not Eddie. They're just using his name. But I guess Michael J. Fox said it really was Eddie who just threw together some like guitar sounds, according to Michael J. Fox. Anyway,
yeah.
Final question from Mr. Harden. What did Eddie believe was his best performance? Now, that could be live. It could be on record. Did he have something that stood out to him that he was like, that's me?
You know, I don't know if he ever narrowed it down that specifically. But but as we touched on earlier, Elon, he was really happy with the Fair Warning record.
Oh, good.
He says, yeah, man, the guys, you know, I finally have enough time to do what I want. You know, it's you know, a lot of pressure on me. And talks about getting sick. And he's actually pretty descriptive what he was going through. Ed could be. Ed was really brutally honest.
I mean, yeah, he didn't have much of a filter.
None. And even Alex confirmed that, you know. But he talked about that stuff. You know, and again, I try to maybe draw that out of him about referencing something. And he just never, you know, wouldn't say, oh, yeah, that was really good, you know. Or, yeah, it was really, I thought his solo in, he really got me. I just thought that was an amazing solo.
Yeah.
And especially the ending. It's just like this little ending. And he just lands on that note. And it's like I always wanted to ask him, like, did you hear that while you were playing it? Does it just, okay, it's just, and again, musically, you know, whatever that chord is, an A, and maybe he's hitting the third or seventh or some blues note, you know what I'm saying? But it's just, it was so amazing. And there's a couple other, do, 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 do. Have you seen
that? Oh, yeah. Junior's grades, DOA, off of Women and Children First. My band used to cover that.
Those last, there, and I go, hey, those notes, he goes, oh, it's just a, and then there's a couple notes at the beginning of one of the Fair Warning solos that always reminded me of, is it A Town Without Pity? It was a instrumental. I know you know exactly what I'm talking about, but it's just this amazing melodic thing at the beginning.
In Fair Warning? On Fair Warning?
Yeah.
You had Afternoon in the Park was sort of the, and.
No, it wasn't.
Did you hear about it later? The intro, did you hear about it later? Doing doing dan doing dan do down doing down 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 do do dan gang
lan an an. I don't think so.
Okay.
It was like a minor sounding thing, but I remember commenting on that because it was just so amazing. And he goes, you know, I would have had to have pushed him. And, you know, again, had I had more time, there's a bit in the book that I didn't include, actually, it was one of the final interviews I did with him, the best of record, the first one came out. And I said, Ed, give me 25 words on each song. So we go through the whole canon of this.
Wow.
It's not like he said, oh, yeah, man, that was a great thing, you know, but he just kind of talked about them in generalities.
That's awesome.
I did a little YouTube post around that. I got my friend Derek Fuller. Derek plays guitar in a Van Halen cover band called Van Halen.
Oh, cool.
Amazing guitar band. So Derek would kind of like play like the main riff from Ain't Talking About Love was on there, Running with the Devil, going through all the records. And he'd play a little bit, then he'd talk about it, and I asked him about it. And then I cut in Ed's audio. So that's a pretty cool little thing.
Awesome. I'd love to hear that. There. Yeah, for sure.
But Ed never, it's like he goes, yeah, man, that's the greatest performance ever had, or that's the greatest solo. I just don't think he thought like that. For him, it was just another piece of this bigger puzzle that for him was never going to be finished.
Right on.
Yeah.
Final question for you. What was Eddie's actual stage amp like for concerts pre PV5150 endorsement? Just one gearhead question.
What was the actual gear?
What was his actual stage amp? Pre the 5150 PV thing he built.
I don't know, man. Wish I knew. For the US Festival, it was, he was using all that 8th and 8th stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all those power amps, with his cabinet. So I don't know if that translated into concert shows as well. That was a festival thing, of course.
Sure.
I don't know if he was bringing his Marshall up. Sorry, guys. I'm a little
fanatic in that area. So as a fair warning fanatic, I hope to God somewhere, please, out there in the interwebs, if there is, or if Wolfie can release a video of a full pro shot Fair Warning tour show, I would be in heaven. Please. Or women and children. One of the two.
They must exist. I mean, I bet there's a ton of stuff out there.
And they shot, didn't Dave and the band shoot a lot of stuff to kind of critique their performances and stuff?
Yeah. I'll bet you virtually every show they played, there was somebody was shooting video.
Damn it. Come on, Wolfie, get it out for us. All right. Is there anything you would like to share about your friend, Eddie, that the world needs to know that we haven't covered?
I think I was a really good friend to him. I think he revealed a lot of things to me that I kept hidden for many, 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 many years. As it turns out, 17 years. So we stopped speaking in 2003, and I started writing the book in 2020. And a lot of that stuff that came out in the book in 2020, I felt a lot of that stuff that Ed didn't want talked about that back in the day, I thought had to be in the book, because that's the kind of book that I had to write. I didn't want to lie to myself or lie to fans. And I think that the only way you could find out more about Edward was by those things that he didn't want anybody to know specifically. I wasn't trying to embarrass him or his family or Valerie or Alex or Wolf. If you read that book, what you come away with is a 580-page homage to my friend and the best guitar player in the world, So I want people to know that. I also want people to know that I began that book 2 months before Edward's passing.
Did you two get to reconnect before he passed?
No, and I write about that in the book, and I don't want to give that away.
Okay.
I did reach out a couple times. Yeah, it was sad, man. And this sounds dumb, but I've thought about it, and it's really the truth. And I'm not typically a spiritual guy or this or that or,
mm-hmm.
People are going to say, Rosie, you're just a crystal sniffing, incense burning. I knew that if I didn't reach out, and in the back of my mind, I knew he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how sick. I go, something's going to happen. And if you don't at least make the attempt to reach out, you're going to feel horrible.
Yeah.
And so I did try to reach out a couple times, and never heard back.
Yeah.
And when he passed, I mean, it was horrific. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. And I don't mean this in any mean-spirited way. It's just the opposite. I wasn't surprised. Look, I didn't know, but I don't know, man. You get some sense about something.
I don't think basically we knew, but I wasn't surprised based on the battles I'd heard about. I hoped we would see another healthy version and hopefully some new music, because I know he had a spigot that never turned off, and I would have loved to hear what else was coming through the magnificent fingers of Eddie Van Halen some more.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're left with an incredible legacy of music. When Al, Wolfie has said it'll be up to Al. When Al is ready to maybe release some things, because we know there's a deep vault that Warner Brothers has some of the private stuff at 5150. And clearly, Wolf has a love for his dad and his dad's work. So hopefully we'll get to hear some of it in the future. No rush, and that's a very personal thing for them, obviously. So, you know, if we're blessed to hear it, great. If they want to keep it to themselves, I totally understand. I hope they don't.
Yeah.
But I totally understand. Well, yeah. First of all, let me say this, man. It's been a pleasure interviewing you. I would love to have more conversations with you. And let me say this to all my listeners out there. Go get this freaking book, Tone Chasers, and leave some Amazon reviews. Look, it's the modern world, people. You got to leave reviews. It helps the algorithms. Music fans, Van Halen fans need to get by this book. I bought it. I can't wait to read it. It'll be here any day. I hope you signed mine, but if not, no big deal.
Of course I signed your book. And
thank
please,
you.
Of course, man, please leave reviews. All you people out there, you send me the most beautiful letters. Take that same sentiment and go over to Amazon. You don't have... If you didn't buy the book on Amazon, it's cool. You have to have an Amazon account. And I figure everybody in the civilized world has one of those anyway. So please go do that. And if I may, you know, if you're interested in the book, you can find it on Amazon, eBay, Reverb, and Etsy. If anybody's ever on Etsy looking for a homemade purse or something. And you can find it on my website, tonechaserbook.com.
Before we have some fun, is there any on your social medias, any or your website? You mentioned the Tone Chaser website. If you want people to connect with you on your socials, what are your social medias?
I'm on Facebook. I think it's Tone Chaser Book, almost yep. The same thing. If you type in Steve Rosen Tone Chaser, you can find me on Facebook. I actually do know my Instagram. I do get around to answering questions, and I love your comments and your insights. It is at Steve.Rosen.
Guitar.pics.
Steve.Rosen.guitar.pics. And if anybody is into collectible guitar picks, I sell collectible guitar picks on eBay, and there's some Van Halen guitar picks up there. So yeah, man, I love hearing from people. And as you're reading the book, man, I love hearing from you. And what chapters do you like? And I live on that stuff. So
hey, I will read the book and I will follow up, and you and I will definitely have a conversation about it once I've read the book.
Positively, man.
All right, let's have some fun, man. All right, so as per tradition on Behind the Curtain, we always end with these modified questions as made famous by Bernard Pivot and James Lipton on Inside the Actor Studio. Steve Rosen, are you ready?
Let's go, bud.
You're on the hot seat. Question number one, what is your favorite word, you wordsmith?
Oh my gosh, what a great question.
We'll get to the cuss words. Don't worry, that's a question too, so we'll get there.
Oh man, fragile.
Okay.
I think it's an amazing word, you know? All yeah. Right.
What is your least favorite word?
Cancer.
Oh, yeah. What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Creatively, hearing a great song.
Okay.
Is that the kind of thing? Reading a great book.
Okay.
Spiritually, I'm not a big spiritual person. You know what I love to see? I was at the gym, mm-hmm. and there's like a little room for like, the little kids,
mm-hmm.
I see like these guys working out, you know, and they go and they go pick up their kids. I mean, I don't know if that's a spiritual thing.
Yeah, I get it. Emotionally, I can be emotional. Sure.
Spiritual and emotional. I mean, okay. I just, you know, someone who's never had kids and never even, you know, but I just think that's so amazing that in this world, take your kid and drop them off at the gym, you go work out. And I just think that's something beautiful.
I'm a dad, so I get it. I get it.
Oh, there you go.
Steve Rosen, what turns you off?
If somebody's condescending.
Okay.
And if somebody comes out and says, oh, you're a shitty writer. It's like, okay, that pisses me off. But if it's like a condescending thing where, well, you know, it wasn't as good as...
Matt Taibbi.
Yeah, man. I instantly go to red and I... You
know, get him, Steve. Bad. Get him. All right, here's everyone's favorite question. What is your favorite curse word? And yes, you can cuss on here.
Wow. I mean, fuck is right up there. I mean, that's pretty good.
I think that's shithead, like 99%.
Yeah. Shithead, I've actually used that in the book. You know, it's funny. I mean, this kind of ties in Elon's interesting. I mean, in the book, I hate reading stuff where guys are cussing the word. It has nothing to do with what the reading, and it's just kind of tossed in there for a shock value.
Yeah.
That to me is just, I just tells me this person's not a good writer. You don't need to do that. So as I'm writing this, I'm thinking, do I want any of that in the book? And Ed cussed a fair amount.
Yeah, he cussed a lot.
So look, I could either rewrite history, I could either edit it out. No one's going to know. But I said, hey, you know, that's who he was. And there are moments when, actually towards the end of the book, when I was kind of angry, I go, yeah, I was fucking mad. Sometimes there's no other word but that one, right?
I get it. What sound or noise do you love?
I can tell you, I just made contact with Stacy Wilson. Stacy Wilson was the daughter of Don Wilson. Don Wilson was one of the original guitar players, and I wouldn't expect you to know this. I barely knew it. In the Ventures.
Okay.
The Ventures were an instrumental surf band.
I know the Ventures.
Walk, Don't Run. Dun, da, 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 da.
Yeah, totally.
For non-guitar players, you're not going to understand this maybe, but the Ventures were there at the beginning, man. They created that whole sound of the reverb and the Fender guitars and the Moog guitars. I hear that sound and instantly I am taken back to that moment, man. I'm like 11 or 12 or 13, and I hear that music and I go, my God, I don't know what that is, but I want to do that. Same way, you know, you heard those, you know, those sounds, you know. I love that sound.
Awesome.
I'll tell you what other sound I love. I've always had cats,
mm-hmm.
and my cat Arpeggio plays a huge role in my book.
That's a great name.
He passed away a little while ago, but the sound of his mewing. I love that. So yeah.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Sirens have always bothered me. Mm-hmm. Police sirens.
Okay.
The obvious one, the fingernails on a chalkboard. I mean, I can still remember that sound, you know. An out-of-tune guitar. my guitar was always out of tune. Like, I could never tune my fucking guitar. Oh, man.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Well, I suppose musician is you know, man, I thought I could have been a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought the idea of teaching English to people and the love of words and doing that, I thought that could have been pretty amazing. Or maybe like a psychologist or psychiatrist, mm-hmm. whichever one, you know, because we talked about it before. I mean, being a music journalist and interviewing these guys, and we touched on it earlier, Elon, most of what they do is sitting there and you're just listening.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're trying to understand and embrace that and respond in an intelligent way. I think really isn't that what a psychologist or psychiatrist does in a trained fashion. So
okay.
I thought I could have maybe handled one of those pretty well.
All right. What profession would you not like to do?
God, I think of all those hard gigs, man. The construction thing, just because I'm incapable of it. I'll tell you one quick story. I had a neighbor who put in a like portable fireplace for me, like the freestanding,
mm-hmm.
and you had to go up on the roof, hammer down like the flashing so the water wouldn't get in. So he says, oh, come up on the roof and help me. I thought, oh my God. So we go up there and he's there doing something, you know. I'm telling you, man, the first time I swung the hammer, I hit my finger. I thought I broke my finger. I am pouring blood. I am so embarrassed.
Man.
And I'm trying to cover it in my shirt and he's not looking, you know, and I'm getting lightheaded, you know. So construction will be a big one, man.
All right.
That'd be
awesome. Hey, man, we're artists. I am not a builder, fixer guy. I hire people to do that. It's not my thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Not my thing. All right, here's the biggie. Now, we modified it since this is a music show. If heaven exists, and I obviously know one of the answers, but we'll go further. What musicians would you most like to jam with or hear in heaven? We know the one.
Yeah, I mean, jam. I mean, my God, the idea of jamming with any of these guys, just as a peripheral here, I did jam with Edward a couple times.
Oh, my God.
And I write about it, and those were amazing moments. And as a so-so guitar player jamming, you can appreciate what that would have been like. So, yeah, so we know the first answer. You know, man, I mean, I know a lot of people probably would have said, well, he just passed away. Jeff Beck would be unbelievable. But who I'd actually like to jam, jam with Randy California, who's the guitar player in Spirit, who I think was maybe the most unsung guitar player of all time.
Wow. Okay.
I think his songwriting and his lyrics, you know. I mean, look, man, you think about, you know, Lennon or George Harrison. I mean, that's too obvious. I mean, you couldn't even, you know, you'd freeze. So at least as amazing as Randy California is, at least I could, you know, I could play. I got
your heavenly open mic night, man. It's your heavenly open mic night. You get to pick whoever you want.
Yeah, that's a great question, man.
Well, hey, man, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure for me to hear about one of my biggest influences and hear about the guy. I'm so bummed I never got to meet him. My fantasy would have been to front Van Halen, even if it was just a 5150, like, hey, Dave's sick. I happen to be sitting there, like, hanging out with you. I'm like, hey, I know the songs. I can sing.
Yeah.
I'd have been fine with that, man. Or if you had gotten me in to be the lead singer when he asked you, that would have been fantastic. This interview has meant a lot to me. I just want to share that with you.
Oh, that's great, man. I hope I didn't overstay my welcome. I mean,
I would talk to you all day. I don't want to keep your time, or I got to edit this down. I don't, you know, there's only so long people listen to podcasts.
Well, listen, man, you got the book, get through the book. We'll have conversation number two and we can dive even deeper.
Yeah, I'd love to, man. And again,
excellent.
I hope you enjoyed it. And
I loved it, man.
I can't wait to read the book. And this has been an absolute joy, man. You made my night. So I really appreciate it.
Made my too, Elon. Thanks so much, man. It was great. Yeah.
We'll talk again soon, man. Thank you.
Talk to everybody.
That was Steve Rosen, the author of Tone Chaser, all about Eddie Van Halen. You're listening to What's Hot in the Strip Clubs Behind the Curtain with Elon Fong, your host. You can find us on all major streaming platforms or our website, www.whatshotitsc.com. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to What's Hot in the Strip Clubs with Danny Myers and Elon Fong, presented by Panda and Strip Joints Music. You can find us on all major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.